Hey everyone, welcome to Guards of Eden. Today's guest is Kaya Cansfield. I met Kaya when she DJ'd at a book launch party that I was at, but she's a woman of many talents. She's also an empowerment coach, the master instructor at Cycle, and she DJs at Nike. The first impression I got when I met Kaya was that she was this beautiful blend of cool and fun. And as I got to know her story a bit better, I grew in admiration for the story that she has and the way that she approaches her life. We cover a whole bunch of topics, and I think it's really symbolic of how Kaya is as a person in terms of her ability to be vulnerable, yet free-spirited and fun. And it was just an episode that I really enjoyed. I loved recording it. I'm such a big fan of Kaya. So without further ado, 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey, Kaya.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super excited about this. You're just like the definition of good vibes, so this is like perfect for me at this time.
Oh my god, that makes me so happy.
Right, okay. First question. Can you give me a song that reminds you of a positive memory or just makes you feel good?
Yeah, it's not like a well-known... It's from... So the genre is called soca.
Yeah.
And it's from, it's born from my island where I'm from, Trinidad and Tobago. And the song is called, is by Kez, the band, and it's called Savannah Grass.
Oh, I'm excited. I haven't heard it. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. So that is going to live on the Guards of Eden Spotify playlist.
I listen. Great addition.
Yeah. I mean, that is a great addition. And also, there's some bangers on there now. I'm actually like so impressed that the people on here have good music taste.
Yes.
So Kaya, how do you remember your childhood? And what was a young Kaya like?
Oh my God. Yeah, this is like, I don't know why I find it so hard to go back in time in my mind, but anyway, young Kaya, I'll like think about my inner child Kaya as I talk about this, because that will help me. Young Kaya was, she was happy, she was friendly, she was like, yeah, really friendly, really happy, got on with everyone, just generally very like light and bright. And childhood was interesting. School was, now I look back on it and I've done a lot of work around like, you know, that kind of stuff. It was interesting. I suffered from bullying in 2 of the 3 schools that I went to. And it was weird. They both happened like sort of like they're very similar experiences. It was like all of a sudden I was part of like a good group of a group of girls were really, really cool, and then all of a sudden they sort of turned around and like turned on me. And it happened in my primary school and in my secondary school, which is really bizarre. So it was like I have good memories and I have kind of like not great memories, but essentially I was not, you know, a very anxious child. I wasn't, you know, depressed. Like, it wasn't nice what happened. And I did, you know, I didn't want to go to school, but I didn't really understand why it was happening. Like, I couldn't gauge. It wasn't as if I'd done something. It was like very, very random, especially in the primary school. And the secondary school literally was basically because I was like smoking and drinking a little bit. This is all I can really think of. It was maybe because I smoked and drunk a bit. And then maybe, and also like I lost weight, like people started to take the piss out of me because I lost weight. Like, it was just, that's all I can think of. So I think more so I was just confused about why, and you know, why this happened. But nonetheless, yeah, essentially I was pretty fun loving and pretty happy and just like very much go with the flow.
Did you go to a mixed school, like gender, or was it all girls for secondary?
Yeah, so I went secondary, the first one I went to was all girls.
Okay.
And that's where it happened.
Yeah.
And I then was like, get me out of here. Like, I was pretty conscious as well, but like more than I knew. So like, it was like year 9, I turned around to my parents and was like, listen, but I am smoking, drinking, bunking. You already know I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy at school. if I don't get out, I'm going to fail all my GCSEs. Like, I actually remember having that conversation and they were like, okay. So they got me out and then I went to a mixed school and then ended up literally changing around. So I stopped smoking, I stopped drinking, and I got all my GCSEs. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I went to an all-boys school. My secondary school experience is, like, super similar. And I always wonder, like, it's such an age-old thing that, like, do you go to, like, a single-gender or a mixed-gender school? And, like, I mean, it's kind of luck of the draw, I guess, but it's just so, it's such a different experience. When you've been to, like, a single-gender school, it's, like, for us, it was, like, we were never trying to impress girls, but it was always this, like, very alpha thing, and I'm not that way, like, at all. I didn't really feel the need to, like, be super hyper-masculine, so when you get to that, and it's just like, oh, fuck, now I'm just getting picked on for that sort of stuff, so... And then you kind of have... And then, like, the reframe, like, because you said you've done work on it in terms of, like, I don't know if that's, like, reframing, or just, like, processing that experience. What was, like, one big lesson you kind of took... now as Kaya now back from having to, I don't know if relives the correct word, but just kind of like re-experience and like have to kind of reprogram how you feel about it.
Yeah, totally. It's a big theme in my life. Like, as I said, I'm a life coach, so I do this stuff. You learn a lot. You are basically a product of your experiences and the people around you, and I've done a lot of self-work, and diving back into that part of my life was essential, because I'm trying to figure out about myself. I'm trying to learn about myself. The running theme really is just lack of self-confidence. Like, I never stood up for myself. I don't really know how. I still don't know how. And, you know, for whatever reason, I was a target. God knows what the reason was. You know, it could have been jealousy. It could have been anything. I'm not even trying to, you know, I don't know what it could have been. But I wasn't someone that was going to stick up for myself. I wasn't someone that was going to turn around and be like, no, that's not right. Like, I just took it. And that is possibly a result of, like, my relationship with my mum, because my mum is mentally ill. Probably going to this later, but mum's mentally ill. And she suffers from schizophrenia. So she makes up stories and she believes things and she makes things up. And back in the day, she used to make up that I used to steal from her and that I was, you know, everything was my fault. And I don't know whether I took that into my, you know, school life, and I didn't question anyone that would bully me or be rude to me. I'd just go, well, it's my fault. And I just take it. So it's just lack of self-confidence. Lack of self-confidence and self-empowerment is a theme throughout my whole life. So I put it down to that, and that's what feels right for me when I think about it. So,
yeah, that's so, that's incredibly powerful to have that breakthrough in terms of, like, of self-awareness. I'm, like, a big, in terms of, like, therapy, in terms of just me trying to process, I guess it's emotional intelligence at the end of the day, right, in terms of understanding why you feel a certain way, and just being able to process why someone else may feel a certain way. But that's just such an incredibly powerful breakthrough, I'd imagine, to like have that in terms of being like, this is a theme that I'm now aware of and can consciously address as an adult. And it had such a profound impact on like me growing up.
Yeah, but honestly, that's one of the things that I've learned as a coach. Like, things will keep happening in your life until you address them. And we do attract things, and we are actually responsible for everything that happens to us, essentially. That's quite a hard concept for people to come around to, because it's easy for us to put blame on others. It's easy for us to, you know, I could happily sit here and be like, it's all their fault. Like, why'd they do that to me? I could go into victim mode, but it's just not how things that happen to you, they happen for you. Yeah, it's reframing that way of thinking and that deep conditioning, because that's like deep social conditioning. When we think about it, we've been, you know, conditioned to think, oh, everything's someone else's fault, or you know, we are a victim. It's not true. So yeah, and it was just something in my life. Empowerment, as you know, and we'll probably talk about as well, I'm a coach. Empowerment, and you know, bringing people up and making people feel confident, understand how their true power, and they are everything they need, is basically what I do as a coach. And unless I do that in myself, I can't do what I do. Yeah. So it's just part of the process of me trying to, you know, help people. So, yeah.
Yeah. You're a woman of many talents. is like the big thing I learned through like doing all this research. I was like, I think she has like an extra couple of hours in the day that we don't know about. Like half 15 and stuff like that. I just don't know. I don't know how you do it, but I want to cover one that's like early. I'm going to call it the arts because I don't know that I don't know the like drilled down version of what it is. But do you remember picking up a passion for the arts like growing up? And do you remember was it like a gradual process, or was there just like one thing that you were like, this is really cool, I can see myself wanting to get involved in this?
I just remember from a young age, I loved acting. That was what the arts were for me. I do love a bit of design. I just feel very, my dad's a musician. I've been brought up in sort of a creative like home. My mom not so, but my dad, and me and my dad are like this, like that is my guy. Like that is my rock. But yeah, so, and I've also been brought up in a very expansive mindset in terms of like, there was, my parents were never like, you must do this and you must do that. Like my parents are very much like, follow your heart. If whatever that is, just go for it. So I really just like dabbled in loads of stuff, and I love design, but yeah, acting really took my heart at a young age. Yeah. Like from when I was in primary school.
That's super interesting. Cause then you go and study at the I want to get this right.
The National Youth Theatre.
Yeah, it is. I've like put it, so the National Youth Theatre. And it's like, it's an incredible institution, isn't it? In terms of like, it's like very selective and spaces are at a premium. So, do you remember going through that process of going through to the National Youth Theatre? And what were your like initial experiences like when you finally got there?
Yeah, so this is a bit fuzzy for me. So I'm trying to get back. But I, my dad told me about it and was like, you should, you know, audition for it. It's meant to be amazing. And it was like, it is a very, very well-known thing. I briefly remember going for it, and I was so young then. And I got in, and I don't think I really understood the value of it. Like I got there and was like, oh, this is cool. But like, it wasn't until I was there that I was like, oh, this is actually a pretty big deal being there. And it was fun. Like, I think the biggest thing I took from it though was the people that I met. Like my friend Chloe Wiley.
Yeah. I'm speaking to her tomorrow, by the way.
Very oh random. My god, are you?
Yeah.
That's so weird. Oh my god, that's so weird. that is my girl. That is like one of my bestest friends.
I
met her there. I met her there when I was like, I can't remember, her memory is really, really good, but mine's actually garbage. thing that I took from National Youth Theatre is my friendship with her. Like that is what I took. Like it was a fun experience. It was great. I just don't remember much really. And I didn't really do much of it after. It was kind of like, it was cool, but it was just more of like a experience more than anything that sort of I really pursued. But yeah, Chloe Wiley is what I took from National Youth Theatre.
And that's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. She's, oh, I love her.
I can't wait for, can't wait. You then go to Bournemouth. Had you been born and raised in London?
Yeah.
So how was it? Because I went to uni in Southampton, and although it's like a different town, it's like a similar in terms of, I think, like very uni town, very party heavy. But at the same time, I'm not even from like London. I'm like just outside of Southwest, but like people found me like super London, and I was like, bruh, this is like a bit mad. Just this whole like this whole transition is a bit mad. I remember I called someone a melt as a joke, and they were like, yo, what is that? And I was like, oh god, I'm like Dorothy out of I'm a far away from home.
Dude, you literally have hit the nail on the head. I felt that the same way. But like the thing with me, like I love new experiences. I love moving. I love going abroad. I love meeting new people. Like, so I remember when I was like, I'm going to uni, I was like, I don't want to be in London. Absolutely don't want to be in London. Yeah. I want to be away from London. I want to meet new people. Like, I went to college in a different place as well. Like, not really where I live. Like, I just, and that's, and I remember, and Bournemouth, like my grandma actually used to live in Bournemouth, so I kind of knew it. And also for what I wanted to do then, it was the best, it was one of the best unis for me to go to. So yeah, I went there and it was definitely a very different experience. And I was definitely like the black sheep, almost literally as well, because I am mixed race. and I felt like it too, to be honest. If anything, that was probably the first time I experienced some sort of like racism. Okay. And like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I've experienced racism on a level which like my black brothers and sisters have, because I haven't. But even just being like mixed race, not even looking mixed race, I experienced the first time of like that very ignorant way of thinking and like just a bit of racism. And that was very eye-opening. Like, as soon as you step out of London, it's, you know, I feel like in London we think we're actually in this massive bubble. When you step outside, it's like a totally different world. So I definitely 100% relate to you and experience that. But I loved it. I did love it. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, I loved my time like down south. It was like great. But even something as simple for me, like I saw one of the guys in my uni flat get like a terrible haircut, like 6 weeks in, and I was like, boy, I'm just not getting my hair cut yet. So I think I got 2 haircuts in Southampton in like 4 years.
I would time
my trips home. I'd like have the maddest hair and be like, yeah, I still don't trust you guys to cut it. But that's really surreal. So was it outwardly racist, or was it like this kind of covert under the layer, but you were just like, wow, what?
It was both. Yeah, so I don't want to speak too much on it, because but I'll definitely share an experience, because I think it's important. So there's a club called like Lava Ignite.
Okay.
I think you might know, like, it's like a chain. It was Lava, and it was like a super club, had like a middle, you know, top, anyway, whatever. And I remember the bottom floor below the ground, so there was ground, there was upper, and there was lower ground. And the lower ground floor was like, you know, R&B and like hip hop, like where I live. And we went in, and I was with my friends, and we went in, and I was like, oh, we're gonna go to the black room. I was like, what's the black room? And they were like, what do you mean, what's the black room? And I was like, what's the black room, guys? Like, I don't know what that is. And they were like, are you joking? I was like, no, like, what is it? And they were like, oh, it's like, you know, where they play like all R&B, hip hop, bashment, like, it's the black room. And I was like, wow. And at least I went, wow. And they were like, what, don't you call it that? I was like, definitely don't call it that.
I was like, really?
But this is the thing, like, I didn't know any different, did they? And I was like, definitely don't call it that. And they was like, well, what'd you call it? I was like, it's just the R&B or hip hop room. Yeah. Like, it's the genre of music. And they were really, really taken back by that. And I remember being like, it's not cool that you say, it's not okay that you say that, because it's not, just no. It's actually racist. Anyway, so that was that. And there was another experience I had where a girl just basically outrightly said that she didn't like black people. We were on the treadmill at the time, and I nearly fell off my treadmill as she said this to me, which was crazy. So yeah, it was like very, very, yeah. And there was a few times where I spoke about this on my conversation with Wiley, actually, on my Instagram. There was a few times where, you know, I would be, you know, I can't, as I said, I cannot stand here and say I've experienced racism to that degree, but I've definitely experienced some sort of tokenism, you know, like, you know, we'd be out and, people might be like, oh my god, Kaya, like, do that dance, like twerk, or like, you know, do that stuff. And it's like, I'd feel a little bit uncomfortable, like I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
And when certain types of music would come on, so yeah, anyway, but it was very interesting, my first experience of that, because in London there's no way. And as I said, a mixed race, you know, I brought up around black white family, and I've I mean, as we talk about this more, like Black Lives Matter movement and white supremacy and privilege and stuff, I've come to realize the fact that I haven't seen race as someone who overtly looks white is not is adding to the problem. But that's just how I've been brought up. And so, but yeah, I didn't see race for a really, really, like forever. I've never, you know, I never seen race. So it was really like, I remember I was really taken back, like, oh my God. So yeah.
Yeah, we will cover it. Because obviously it's important to me. It's just, it's so strange, I guess, because it's something that you're so proud of in terms of heritage wise. Mm-hmm. And for people to not only mistaken you for not having that heritage as a part of you. And then also to like, I guess it's this air of like, because you've got fairer features, people see you as maybe like more palatable, or, and that's where this air of like tokenism comes in. It's like so fucking unfair and like not on at all. Like, it's just really upsetting. But
yeah,
I know what you mean. You get a little bit down south and shit's just like a real culture shock. Like, I found it super weird.
It's a real culture shock. Yeah, because you haven't been brought up around that. It's not what you know. And you just, in London, it's so cultural, it's so diverse. You just don't, you do become a bit ignorant to beyond the bubble. But apart from that, it was great to be down there, and I studied journalism, which was awesome. So yeah, it was good. It was good. I enjoyed my time there.
What was it like studying journalism?
It was really, really good. The degree was amazing. I went to one of the best media schools in the country to go and do it. And it was weird. Like, you know, I said I wanted to do acting before that. And then I remember I went to do a foundation degree at Drama Centre, which is a very well-known drama school. I'd got on to the three-year course after that to do the degree, but I had a major, like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. So I didn't. I took a year out where I just worked, and I just, you know, traveled a tiny, not too much. And then I got round to being like, okay, what do I want to do? And journalism was, you know, like radio, presenting the news, TV. And it was an amazing degree. It was an unbelievable degree. Like, it was really good. It was hard. Like, I learned law and stuff that I don't even do now. And I don't do journalism, but it does come through about some of the things I do. But yeah, like, it was really, really good. I really loved it. I'm just not really using it much right now.
No. So there's there's an alternative universe where we've got like the 6 o'clock news with Kaya Cansfield.
Yeah, well, presenting is something that I do still want to take up. In terms of news journalism, that kind of stuff, like, I do enjoy writing, and I love magazines. I love media in that sense, but yeah, just not in the, like, you know, journalism learn shorthand.
So something I found really interesting, in a little bit of a sad way, but I think that how courageous and open you've been about it, is your experience with an eating disorder. Can you explain where that began? Because I think timeline-wise, this is probably like around this step, right? In terms of the post-university life, right? So do you remember how it kind of initially began? And I guess, once again, to ask that question again, was it quite immediate? Or do you feel like it was like a gradual transition of like slipping into that habit?
So at the time, where it began at uni. Uni first year, I left home for the first time. I was in a new environment. It was fun. First year was fun. Like, it was really just getting to know myself, and I was in my uni halls, and I found friends and stuff. And I also had just met my boyfriend at the time. But his job, he was not where I was. He was having to move around the country. So I remember I went to Bournemouth. He at the time was living in like Hereford or somewhere like that, like okay. far.
Yeah.
So we were pretty much doing long distance, and that was quite a lot to take on at that age. Like I was, you know, quite young. But we made it work and we really loved each other and it was great. And we, you know, came to see me, blah, blah. But like, he was, you know, really good looking, great guy. His job was like quite like, it can be a little bit intimidating what he did. And so I think what happened was, is that I'm very easily influenced too, as well as not really standing up for myself. I'm very easily influenced, and I've got quite an addictive personality. When I get my mind on something, I can really, so, you know, he's very, very fit as well. And I think there was a part of my self-worth that was very triggered in the first year of uni, where I wasn't near my boyfriend. I was in a very different environment. I wasn't around my usual friends. You know, all my comfort's been taken away. I didn't know how to cook. I felt pretty insignificant. I was trying to find some sort of like something in myself. I was trying to find something which I should have tried finding myself. Obviously, I was none the wiser at that age. A girl that I was hanging around with was going to the gym a lot, and I started to get into the gym. I wanted to kind of like take care of myself in that way, but it got very, very obsessive. She was very into her food, and I sort of, you know, followed suit. And there was also a bit of a time there where that friendship got a bit weird, because she was very, very much watching what she eat, and she then started to watch what I ate and was kind of telling me off for things. And as I said, I don't stick up for myself. So I was like, oh shit, okay. And just with everything, long distance, insecure, I just got obsessed and found solace and security in controlling what I look like and my food and how I look. And yeah, and then from there it just went downhill. Yeah, I just felt very, yeah, just not confident at all. And the thing is as well, at that time and back in the day, having muscle and strong women and that stuff was not a thing, bro. It was not a thing. It was more like skinny, petite, and like, you know, like no muscle, and like no, like it was very, like very skinny, right? And yeah. And you're nodding because I know you know, like yeah, that was very thing. And so that was what I was all I'd known, was to aspire to being skinny.
Yeah.
And so doing loads of cardio, not eating a lot, didn't know about exercise too much either. Like I was going to this gym with my friend who didn't know none the wiser either. And yeah, and I aspired to be this because that was what in my mind was worthy of love, worthy of attention, worthy of, you know, being beautiful. And so yeah, that was how it really began, and then it just got worse and worse.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time here, because although it's like, although I've respected and found it just amazing to hear you be so open and so just honest and provide such a real like voice to the experience, I understand it's not a part, like it's not a, there's so much great about you that I wouldn't want to spend too much time in terms of like drilling on it. But how was it to have a support system that maybe was well-intentioned and wanted the best for you, but like I guess just maybe didn't go about it the right way, or just didn't provide the, I guess, what the support you maybe would have helped you to kind of progress through it quicker and not be stuck in that state for too long? How was it to kind of wrestle with that?
Yeah, it was hard. I didn't know. Again, I was really, really unaware at that age. Mm. Like, honestly, the journey I've been on since from then to now is actually mind blowing. Like the self-awareness I have now and the knowledge I have, like is honestly crazy. So at the time I didn't really know that, to be honest. I didn't think I needed anyone. And also with my mum's stuff, and I just learned to look after myself. My dad's very laid back. My dad used to travel a lot for work, so he wasn't really around. Although I'm like this with him, he wasn't really around. It was just me and my mum a lot, and I couldn't rely on her for anything. I never told her anything. I didn't trust her. So like, I just kind of did shit on my own. Like yeah. I didn't confide anyone. I didn't really know what it was like to talk to people. I just thought I was everything that I needed for myself, you know, and I found solace in controlling what I ate. I found solace in that, and I found control and support in that. Mm-hmm. And I found everything that I was, well, I thought I found everything that I was looking for in that at the time. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hot, you know, eating sores are really hard because they really bring out a very sinister side to a person. Like, the people around me knew it was happening, but it's such a sensitive thing to talk about because the person, unless they're ready to hear, is not going to hear you. Like, I wasn't trying to hear my friends being like, you got to eat more. I was like, yeah, cool. You don't know what I need. Like,
yeah.
You don't even hear. I'm just like, yeah, cool. Like, I just would literally be like, peace, whatever.
Yeah.
And also, I'd end up lying because I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it. Luke, I did not want to hear it. I didn't want to hear people being like, have you eaten today? Oh, have you eaten enough? Oh, blah, blah, blah. I didn't want to hear it. So I'd be like, yeah, 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 yeah. I'd lie all the time about what I ate, all the time. And then what happened was is that that just manifested in my relationship. And I was anorexic for a lot of my relationship. And it wasn't how he met me. It was really hard for him because I turned into this person who was like quite, you know, obviously very, very skinny. And he was like, you know, it's really hard to be with someone like that when you don't understand what's happening. And I wasn't going to talk about it because he didn't understand. And so it was like this elephant in the room all the time. Like, you know, like, and he obviously didn't grow attracted to me anymore because I was skinny. It wasn't how he met me. And like, but he didn't know how to communicate that. Anyway, it was just a madness. So it was such a, and you know, I don't mind talking about it because it's actually one of the biggest parts of my life. It's really what actually allowed me to step in my power and actually really what allowed me to like be where I'm at now.
Yeah.
So don't feel bad about talking about it at all. It's a huge part of my life and I'm really okay with it. Like, I'm really okay with it. It's actually really important for me and what I do to talk about it. So it's all good. But
yeah
it's wild.
It is wild. And it actually lets me go, it lets me transition to something super positive. And it's actually like one of my favorite like glow up stories like that I've experienced. Ah. I've really enjoyed it. Like, because you've been so open about it, I've almost got to like be like, it's that idea of like footprints in the sand, like through your life. I kind of get to like walk alongside you. And then, so I got to like really experience it like from the side as like a stranger looking in the past. But I loved it. So please explain finding cycle.
Yes.
Becoming an instructor. And then knocking this whole eating disorder on the head in like an amazing story. I loved it.
Oh, thank you, dude. That means a lot to me, man. So I'll explain it all. So basically, I was anorexic for pretty much the entire time I was at uni, probably like 2.5 years out of the 3. I got out of uni, came home, was still my boyfriend, but that didn't last very long until I got back. Like, it just got to a point where it was like, this is just not happening. And also, I got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. And so like, what broke the camel's back is I moved back home and my boyfriend moved in my family home with me.
Right.
And my mum had an episode and she got really, really unwell and we ended up having to leave and I got my own place and then we just broke apart. So anyway, but that was like sort of the beginning. That was sort of the beginning of my next part of my life. At that point, I'd landed a job in the beauty PR industry, which is quite linked to journalism. So I was in PR and I was, you know, still quite unwell at that point. In my new job role, I was working like ridiculous hours because PR and I was an intern. I was just trying to like, you know, impress and you know how it was.
Yeah.
Just trying to impress, working my fucking ass off. Sorry for swearing.
No, don't apologize. That's all right.
And I was still going to the gym. I was going to the gym loads and I was working at a PR agency near Mortimer Street Cycle.
Okay.
And I was working there and You know, as a new studio opens, they give like free credits out. So we're giving out free credits to like companies around the area. And so I was like, oh, free fitness class. Yeah. I'll definitely do that. Like, in turn, I'll take all the fucking freebies I can get. So I literally went to one, and it was with AD, the king. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time in a long time where I felt like I escaped, like that's all I can describe it as. Mm. I walked into this dark room. I didn't really enjoy it as much. I won't lie. I didn't enjoy it as much as maybe you think I did.
Right.
Okay. There was something that really, really, really resonated with me. Mm. So it's a dark room. There's lights going. The music was like loud. In 45 minutes, I didn't know what the fuck was going on, but I just lost myself and I just became present and forgot about everything. And I walked out and I was like, rah, I need to do that again. So we got the credits, so I went again, and then one thing after the other, Luca, I became obsessed. I became obsessed with Cycle. It was when they just opened, I was obsessed. I was going about 4 or 5 times a week. I knew the front of house. Mm. I, you know, they knew my shoe size and my favorite bike. Like, I was them regular riders, like you, actually. I was on them regular riders. It was like, I knew the instructors. I was like in it. That was my solace. It was my place where I just escaped all of my worries, my voices, my insignificant, you know, lack of self-worth. It was where I became just like free from it. And I was, little did I know at the time, I was really actually using my body to sort of fight it and to come into my power. And then I'm very, very big on like intuition and like, you know, just trusting and being fluid, as you know, like I do 100 different things. I'm very like, oh, like this. Anyway, I was still in PR at this time, and there was something within me that was just like, you need to get more involved. Like, try, how can you get more involved with Cycle? So I emailed CEO Rian and was like, hey Rian, I know you know me, like I you know, I'm Kaya, I don't know if we've really spoken, but I just wanted to email you because I absolutely obsessed with Cycle. I love it. Started eating disorder at the time. Mm. I was absolutely obsessed with Cycle, and I just really want to get more involved. I don't really know how, I don't really know what, but I just feel like I need to email you, blah blah. And she emailed me back. She was like, hey Kaya, so good to hear from you. Of course I know who you are. Would you, she's like, so amazing, want to get more involved, how would you feel about auditioning to become an instructor? And you know, you're like, me? Like, I was like, what? Like, as I am, as I've always been, I'm like, sure. So I was, so I was like, okay. So I did, and I auditioned, and the song, actually, do you know what,
I mean,
maybe you should put the song on the playlist. Yeah.
I was like, this is the one question that's going through my head. I was like, I still don't know what song she went with. And her
instructor. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you that. But maybe add this one as well, if you don't mind me adding two. But this one, it's another Soca track. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you guys know, if you're hearing and listening and you know what it is, like triple time on the bike. Ooh. It's like not double time. It's like it's so fun. So fun. So I got up on the instructor bike, and I was like, oh my god, not only just like, they just basically were like freestyle, like do what you feel like you've done in class is your audition. Mm. Did this one track, did a few moves, like, you know, few moves that I thought and learned in class. And I got up Luca, and I was just like, you know when you feel something, like I just was like, oh, I think this is it. I just felt like I landed in something that I don't know, can't explain it.
Yeah.
And although it was a hot mess, the track, everyone was happy. Everyone was like, oh my God, that was so fun. Oh my God, that was... Because I was literally like this. I was like... Obviously, people can't see me listening, but I was literally like grinning. I was like this on the bike the whole time. And then the rest just happened. I got onto the training academy. I was working my full-time job as I trained for Cycle, which was crazy because I need to take some time off when I, you know, I had to finesse a few days. It's going to be good, who cares? and I trained, and what happened was throughout the training was that I was around athletes and such. I was around people who were doing fitness. I was around people who were really fit physically, but like for their job, I was around dancers, I was around people. And I was around people who were eating in a different way, like fuel and like nurturing their body so they could perform. And I was noticing, and I was, you know, obviously things click as I'm learning and training about the body and, you know, energy and stuff. I had to start eating something because I couldn't do what I was doing because I was expending so much training my ass off on the bike. And so unknowingly, as I was doing the training, my eating habits started to change and my mentality about it started to change. And honestly, there was nothing going to get in my way of becoming an instructor. I was on that training program. I was like, this is literally what I need to do. Like I got on that bike and every time I was like, I need to give people what this place gave back to me. Like I need to give people, I just had this gut feeling. I was like, I'm here for a reason. Like I am here because I need to help people and I'm going through stuff and I want to give back what this room gave to me, like this escape and this sense of empowerment and fighting with your body and like this stuff. And I remember talking to Rian whilst I was training and she was like, you know, I wasn't going to tell you this, but I'm almost thinking about not putting you through. And I was like, okay. And she was like, because you don't look healthy. I didn't look healthy on the bike. I looked very skinny. And that was the beginning of the end of anorexia for me. There was nothing going to get in my way. And it was either I stay with this like lack of self-worth and I stay with this feeling of like, you know, finding worth in my weight and in my, you know, this and staying in this low vibrational and really low life state, to be honest, or I heal, I sort myself out and I go and help people who need what I am experiencing. And, you know, everything just came together and all of a sudden the light that was so bright around watching what I eat, my weight, or what I look like, just because it's getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. And the purpose light started to like fucking turn on. And then that was basically it. I qualified to be an instructor. I recovered from anorexia through the training process. I remember I was thinking about asking for help, but I didn't have the time. I didn't have the capacity. So it was like that was that light bulb for me. I was like, this is it. I have to do it myself. And I became an instructor. I was teaching like whilst I was going to work. So like I was still doing my full-time job. So I was like going to teach in the morning at 7 a.m., then going to teach my 9 to 5. And then I'd still go and teach after some days. I don't know how the fuck I did it. Obviously, my newfound like way of eating and living, you know, I was fueling and I was recovering and I was living in my purpose anyway. So I was doing that. But then, you know, I love my PR job, but it just got to a point where I was like, I love PR. But I love the teaching is where I live. Like this is literally my purpose. Like I've never felt anything like it, to be honest. I've never felt anything like it when I started. And I was like, one's got to go. So I got up and I left my PR job and I just trusted the process and went full throttle into cycle instructing, started to teach full time, qualified to be a PT to help support me, you know, doing other stuff. And at that time, I was very, very lucky. I felt like timing was everything. I was at the point where Boutique Fitness had only really just begun. It was really like early, early days. And I was really there to see the whole thing grow. And I was at a really pinnacle time. And 5 years later, here I am. that's really, I think that answers your question.
It does. And more. I love it.
We covered quite a lot in that one, but yeah.
No, it was perfect. This was the one thing that was like an overall notion that really like hit me, because I've only done one of your classes, and that's really sad. I did it legitimately the week before.
Yeah,
I fell ill in terms of what I think could be corona, but it was like two weeks before the lockdown. But that's why we're recording now and not then, because this was something that was pre-planned. But one thing that I've noticed from the boutique industry as a whole is that it's a largely like white customer base, and it's quite obviously because it can be quite expensive. You just naturally attract a certain potential like person, just
yeah,
and that's good, bad and indifferent. But one thing that I've always really enjoyed about your classes is that you're like very unapologetically like who you are, and you're super proud of your like your Trini heritage, and you're very, you play this like beautiful array of music. I think soca, afrobeat, hip-hop, R&B, like all these beautiful, like this beautiful wide range of like black music that I've, which I really enjoyed. Was there ever any, I guess for lack of better terms, like growing pains with that experience when you started teaching?
No, I just didn't even didn't even, it wasn't something that ever came to my mind. And that might be a product of my privilege. That I didn't have to worry. I'll wholeheartedly say that, because I don't know if that's going to be the similar experience for others who, you know, like my black instructors who might have to think about what they play because of worry of being labeled. And it's kind of sad for me to say that I didn't have to worry, because I feel like some people might have had to worry, and that's really sad just because of the color of their skin and being labeled. But no, I didn't. And I didn't question it. I just went wholeheartedly in with who I am, and it's just, you know, I didn't ever question it.
Yeah.
I didn't ever question it. I think whether I have been labeled or whether I have been pigeonholed for that, I don't know. Some part of me thinks yes on some degree sometimes, but like, it is what it is. I am who I am. Yeah. And if I serve a purpose in a different studio or, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah. I've made sure that I haven't sort of censored myself for it.
Yeah. Cause you were just, it was like clearly authentic. Like there was clearly no, of course you've got to be a performer. So you have to be like a slightly like volume turned up version of, but it's still just a volume turned up version of yourself. So
yeah.
And it's, you know, we'll get into something precursor of how I actually met you, which, believe it or not, isn't through life coaching or spin, which is weird to anybody that knows me, because they're like two big things that are like play a part in my life. But yeah, it just felt so authentic, and it was like the way you just were was very free. So I just wondered if it was, it was something I was curious about, if you ever had to.
It's such a good question. Because it couldn't have been that way, and the fitness industry is quite like intimidating in that sense as for instructors, and it is pretty white consumer based. It's very like, when you really deep it, it's very, very, I don't really know what the right word or way to say this is, but it's quite class based, you know.
That's,
it's
exactly
very expensive.
What I was thinking. That's what
right,
I was
right.
thinking.
It's very, very, you know, it is, and it's not easily accessible. And it plays on that affordability, which, you know, does play into race too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very good question, because I do feel like my experience can be very different to someone else's, who is of, you know, black or ethnic minority. Yeah. So it's a great question. It's something definitely I want to actually explore further, but
yeah,
I can't speak on it from my experience.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to April 2018, and this is like a very, I don't know if it's because now you've said it, it's like brought back a load of different people's experiences I've heard, but you ended up having a medical challenge that ironically isn't spoken enough, but and it's something that, I don't know why, but once I was looking through, like, kind of, once again, walking through the timeline of your journey with it, I was like, yeah, I've heard, like, multiple instructors, like, struggle with this. And it's, like, a vocal problem, like, it's vocal surgery. Can you speak to, like, how that developed? And then, obviously, the process of, you had to take a bit of time off the bike for it. Because I definitely think there's loads of people in fitness professionals that will find that just invaluable, in terms of, it's something that people aren't aware of in a performative job, but that your vocal cords do need to be treated with the same affection as your body and your mind and everything else.
Yeah. It's, oh my God, it was the biggest lesson. Another big lesson of my life. literally it, Oh, like, yeah, man. I don't know where I begin. Yeah, I basically, you know, when I got into the fitness industry, I wasn't a fitness professional. Mm. I learned everything to cycle. I was trained there. I was trained very well. Mm. But, you know, I was in a corporate job before. I wasn't a freelancer. I wasn't fitness-based before. So there's only limited knowledge that I had around some fitness. Mm. And I went in very wholeheartedly. I went in and I started teaching 10 classes, 12 classes a week, which is really, really too much, to be honest. Mm. But none the wiser. And also I was living in my purpose. I was like, you know, when you live in your purpose, you're like, I want to do it all the time. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. I'm so passionate about it. I love it. And that was me. So I went in with like 10, 12 classes a week. I did that for like 3 years. Mm. And it just caught up with me because I didn't have any sense of self-care. I didn't know when to stop. I was a freelancer, so when you're a freelancer, you don't work, you don't get paid. Like there was lots of factors, and I just, you know, I was very irresponsible with it. Mm. I was very irresponsible with it. And it got to a point where I couldn't ignore it anymore because it was painful to talk. It was painful. And although some people listening who haven't been to a class might be like, but you've got a microphone. Yeah, I do got a microphone. But if you haven't been taught, again, you're an instructor and you are essentially a performer. Mm. We're not taught. One of the other things is that we weren't taught how to project or, you know, although I did acting back in the day, it wasn't something that I put two and two together. And also, whilst you're teaching on the bike at the same time as talking, it's a very different set of skills, right? I'm exerting and I'm talking at the same time. It's not as if I'm like walking around a stage, just talking and projecting. It's very different. So I didn't know how to do that. And it got to a point where, yeah, I couldn't ignore it anymore. And my voice was hurting. I sound like Barry White. I was literally like, all right, I sound like I had like 50 cigarettes a day. I sounded so different. Mm. I sounded so different to what I sound like now. And I had to go see a specialist. And I went to see a specialist and he was like, yo, your vocal cords look like you smoke 50 a day. And I was like, well, ironic, because I'm a fitness instructor and I don't. he was like, maybe give it some time to do like vocal therapy and then we'll assess the situation. Mm. Did it, but it didn't really work. And I went back and he was like, your only option is surgery. I have to operate. You have a nodule, you have a polyp, you have Reinke's edema, which is like severe swelling. Like you're just in a really bad place and you need surgery. Oh. And it was devastating. Like I remember coming out and I just cried. I was like, oh my God, I'm injured myself. It was like a very big like realization. I'd injured myself. I hadn't taken care of myself. My voice is like it's like everything. It's how you communicate, it's how you, you know, how you talk to people. It's everything. It's a huge part of who we are. And all of a sudden it was like, God. And then, yeah, so I went for the surgery and it was possibly one of the most life-changing things I've ever been through. I had it and I couldn't speak for about 3 weeks. Like I was mute for about 3 weeks. I wasn't allowed to exercise for like near enough a month. I wasn't able to go back to work until like 8 weeks, 12 weeks after that. Mm. And yeah, like it was just life changing. I was silent. And in that time of being silent, I was forced to look inward. I looked inward. I did all my self work. I was like, you know, what the fuck am I doing? I can't go to work. It was like, do you know what? And when we got to lockdown and Corona, I kind of was like, well, this reminds you of being in recovery.
Right.
Because I couldn't do anything. So I was almost like, well, I've done this.
Yeah, right.
But I actually can talk this time. But honestly, like I learned how to take care of myself. I realized that, wow, if I'm not going to take care of myself, no one is. Mm. I really, really, this is not a joke. I'm an athlete. I have to take care. I have to be responsible, you know. And, you know, at that time where you stop and you know, like this time of Corona, you were forced to reflect, you know, what is serving me? Who am I? Like, what is my voice? And I really went through a period of where I just like, didn't know if I wanted to do it anymore. I didn't know whether I wanted to teach. I just I became so protective of myself in recovery because it was just so important for me to recover and heal again, that I was like, nothing is coming in the way. Like, I literally, if it's not serving, bye. Like, and I ended up quitting Cycle because I was like, this is it. Like, I don't know if I can go back to the place where I injured myself. I don't know if I can go back. It felt so wrong for me. And I ended up being off the bike and out of work for like 8 months, which was like madness. But again, life changing. I recovered well. My voice is now like fully healed. It was just the biggest eye opener, like the best eye opener ever, in terms of like, before I went for surgery, I was like doing 5 classes in a day sometimes. I was, you know, and as a fitness instructor, you're like, well, my fitness is really key as well. And then you're maybe teaching 2 classes and you're going to go to 1 class, but like you forget that actually in your 2 classes that you are not counting as exercise, you're still exerting. Yep. So why are you going to go into one when you're just beating yourself into the ground? You're beating your body to the ground. Like, all this stuff just came up and I just realized so much about myself. And I found my real, true, authentic voice after that. Like, I found a really deeper part of myself. Yeah, in that 8 months, I just worked on me, found out about me. I then found my retreats. Yeah. I ventured off and did my own stuff. My life coaching as well was born then. I think I've got to a point where you return to state. That was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Yeah, it breaks. So there's so many points that comes on my head. I think the first one is, which I think a lot of people maybe that are in this actually quite fortunate state now, is that I guess if you were to find your dream and passion, it would be very natural to just feel like you've got to make up for the lost time of the finding it, in terms of, we often don't do that, I guess, as like humans. It's actually quite sad, but we don't treat the chasing of the dream as like a valuable part of the process. So no. I guess there's an element of like, you found instructing and was like, we're going to hit that as much as we can, because I feel, I don't know, maybe it's intrinsically me and maybe it's me projecting, but it's that idea of when you find something you love, you just want to keep getting it. And then you kind of feel like, oh God, I've missed out on all this potential time. I could have had it. So really, really interesting. And then, I guess it's this idea of when you're exerting yourself, I guess, and the emotion of what that room can be. Like, if you get a really great class, it's probably quite natural to push the voice a bit more and be like, let's go, and just like really go for it.
Honestly.
It's like, it's hard to like I'm imagining it's hard to like rein that in. Even if your voice feels a bit sore,
100%.
There's like a nature to push back against it.
Yeah. A lot of people were like, just don't shout. And I'm like, bro, like,
you can't help it.
I can't go in there and be like, I'm not going to shout today. Yeah. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in that room. Like, I'm in such a state of flow as soon as I walk in that studio, because I am living in my purpose and I'm becoming a bit of a channel. I feel like, you know, I don't even remember half the shit I say in class. I'm like, it's just all coming from a place of real flow, deep state, like higher life state flow. And I don't know what I'm saying. I don't plan it. I'm going with the energy of the room. You don't know what's going to show up that day. It might be a very challenging class. It might be a class where people are like, just fucking want it, and you're like going for it. It's like, you don't know. And I'm not someone who's going to hold back. I go in there and I give my all. And then it comes down to like, even after class, because people like to hang around after class. Oh, I socialize with them and I've just exerted myself 45 minutes, giving you my entire soul. Now I'm going to talk for like another half an hour, which is more exertion. Yeah. And then I'll go to home, which will now end up being at like 9 p.m. And then I've got to get up the next day and do it all again, like less than 12 hours. It was like that. And you know, when you're like, I didn't see it at the time, but of course my voice was fucked, because there's no recovery time. There's no consideration for the small little muscles that are my vocal cords. I'm just beating it the whole way through and I'm not even thinking about it. So, yeah. Yeah. Mad. And that's why it's such an important, it is such a, I probably should do more about it actually, especially, do you know what, you've actually triggered something. I might do it before people go back to work, but like at this time, especially with Corona, where all fitness instructors have had been off for 3-4 months, I'm telling you now, people's voices are going to be so well rested, and it's really important.
Yeah,
it's really, really, really important.
And I've got a surprise for you. There was one question I didn't give you.
Oh, God, come on then.
And I did it on purpose, very much so. So,
okay.
I would have spoke about it, but you do eventually jump back on the bike in October of 2018.
Yeah.
And I do want you to speak to that class in a bit, but I nicked an Instagram caption from that day. So I want to kind of just get your reaction to like hearing these words again. And kind of,
oh my God.
So,
oh my God, okay.
So, quote, I could write a monster essay long caption like I always do, but at this point, there really isn't many words to describe the feelings and energy shared tonight at 7:30. Hashtag Monday Madness. I said it a thousand times over tonight, but deeply, my heart, soul, and whole being are deeply grateful for what can be described as one of my most treasured memories to date. For so many reasons which may never be known to all. After feeling lost, found, and after a long and unpredictable year, I know that all roads were meant to lead back here. For everyone who believed that and who came tonight again, I can only say thank you for your belief and love. After 7 months, I finally feel like I'm exactly where I was meant to be. So how does it hear to hear that? And what was that first time like on the bike after everything?
Oh my God. It was, oh my God. It feels amazing to hear that. Thank you so much. That really feels amazing. I really appreciate you for that. That is really amazing. No, seriously, that is, it was amazing. It was scary. It was amazing. It was euphoric. It was fun. It was aligned. It was amazing to be back.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Scary though. It was scary for me.
I can imagine.
I remember being very scared just because it was back where I injured myself. I was back where I injured myself, and I was so scared of just undoing all the work that I'd done with my vocal therapist, like learning how to talk again, and it was crazy. But it really did feel exact. Those words really hit my heart because it's exactly how I felt. And it was like homecoming. It was like homecoming. It was incredible. And I'm very grateful to Rian, my CEO, who reached out to me and asked me to come back because she really believed in me. And she really messaged me and was like, I really just feel like you need to come back. And she was the one that ignited the conversation again. So I'm very grateful to Cycle, you know, like they really see a lot in me, and it really is like part of who I am. So yeah, it was awesome to be back.
Well, they get a lot of value in you because of how great you are. So I saw the cat, like obviously just kind of once again me trying to walk through your timeline, and I saw it and I was like, I nearly gave it away. I nearly said, oh, I've got a surprise for you when you said,
oh, no,
I enjoy writing. Like, I still enjoy writing. And I was going to say, actually. And I was like, oh, no, she'll get all anxious and be like, what the fuck's in your plan?
Thank you so much.
So, yeah, as I've said, we don't know each other through life coaching, even though it's something we both have in common. I'm not practicing, but I've got a couple of qualifications. I love spin, and we didn't meet through spin, which is another funny thing. We met because you're an amazing DJ.
And my strings.
Yeah, and and I'll just be perfectly honest. I think I might have said it to you when I met you properly, but
yeah.
I was like, first of all, of course, like DJ, it's like the one thing that you probably hear before you see, like in terms of like, You were performing at Bangs, her book launch party, which was a lot of fun. I was like, oh, wow, this DJ's great. And then I looked over and you were just like very cool. Like that's like the word that came to my head. I was like, I think it was like you were dressed very cool. You were very like in between, like loving the music you were playing, but at the same time, like looked like you were doing bit. I just remember that like very vividly. Like when I met you, I was like, man, she's just really cool. Like, I don't know.
Oh my God.
So just to make you feel very weird, I thought I'd just give that up for you.
Oh, thank you, bro.
So when did you find DJing, and what like drew, I not even what drew you to it, but like how was your experience like learning to DJ?
Yeah, so as I said like before, my dad's a musician, so I've always been around music. It's always been just like a big part of my life. I love it, and you know, music just speaks to you as a person on so many different levels. So yeah, I've always been around it, so it's always been a love. And then with Cycle, because we have to make playlists and we have to, you know, pick music and really like really consider our music in terms of like what we're moving to, the journey emotively, that kind of stuff, like it's really big part for me. And I really pick my music. I'm very, very picky about my music. I mean, sure, we all are.
Yeah,
instructed, but you know, very picky. And so like, you know, also for me, like every sort of 3-4 years I get to a place I'm like, okay, what am I doing? And I get like, you know, I want to do more, and I'm like, okay, am I still on the right path? Like, is there somewhere else I need to be, blah blah. Got sort of 3 years at Cycle, and I was like, okay, I want to try and explore something else now, because I think it's important as a freelancer to not just have put all your eggs in one basket. Yeah. As I learned from being injured.
Yeah.
So like I was like, cool, like let me look into it. And I love the idea of DJing. I love the idea of DJing. I was like, this is something that I've always sort of wanted to look into. And then I basically just did it. Like I got on a course, I learned how to do it, I then got my own decks, I practiced, and then I just was like, what is my dream goals? My dream goal, one of my dream goals was to work in Nike as a DJ. I'm now there, which is ridiculous. And I just went for it. And that's just something about me, which has been there from young. I just go for it. I don't, you know, although I've struggled with self-worth and confidence, it's not really as such going to stop me from, and I never stop myself from going for my dreams. Mm. I've always very much been like, I can achieve anything, and I know I can. So I just went for it, and I love it. And it's just something that really complements my life and what I do. And it's another way for me to help people feel good. People feel good through music, and I love it. And the experience of learning was hard. Like, DJing is not easy, bro. Like, no. It is not easy. Like, it's hard. And as we're older as well, and as we are like adult, we don't really like to be beginners at many things, you know. Like, it's hard for us to learn a new skill, and we find it quite hard to be a beginner again. And all our ego is like, oh, you should be able to do this. And like, oh, shut up. Like, you know. So anyway, it was a very, very humbling experience to be in the learner's seat again. Also very stimulating. And so I love it. And yeah, to do Bangs's book launch was amazing, because I love her. Yeah. And I like her music taste. Like, from her classes, you can really tell what she likes. So yeah, that was a real honor. So yeah, and it's just something that I do on the side for sure. I love it.
So you do all these different things. You've had to go through a global pandemic. You've had all these different things to go through. As you reflect on like where you are now in life and what your journey's like.
Yes.
How do you feel like you're going to transition, I guess? Like, where's your heart and head at, like, as you kind of transition out of this pandemic that we're going through and as the world kind of reopens?
It's a really good question. As I said earlier, like, I'm very much like, I'm very a person of like blue sky thinking. I really believe in developing yourself. I'm always thinking about what the next thing I'm doing is, and I'm always looking forward. And although we have been through a really, really horrendous time globally in terms of pandemic, and it has been horrendous and awful, I've stayed hopeful throughout it, and I believe that everything happens for a reason. I have very, very you know, I really, really, truly believe that. And so although a lot of people might think, you know, 2020 is cancelled, I'm very much like kind of the opposite. I don't actually, I think that we're going through quite a transitional time. We're learning a lot more about ourselves, about the world, and we are going into a new world. The world's not going to be the same after this. It can't be. Like, no. It just can't be. And neither can we. And so I'm very excited about what's going to happen post-corona. If that looks like something different to what I thought 2020 would look like, that's totally fine with me. I totally trust the journey. And I'm just going with the flow, you know, like I'm not going to lie, I don't want to put a downer on it, but I am a bit skeptical of how long. I don't know if there's going to be a second wave. I'm not sure, you know, like I'm hopeful, but I'm also being safe. I'm like not getting too excited about things opening up. I don't know what gyms are going to look like anymore. I don't know if that's still where I want to sit in half a year or wherever it is. I don't really know what my next thing is, but I know that I'm on a journey to find that.
So
I guess answer to your question, I think that things are going to look really different. I know I'm quite different and I'm okay with it, and I'm just going with the flow. I'm going to go back to teaching, which is great. Not as much as before, because I don't want to do that as much anymore. It's not really a focus. I want to progress with my coaching and other stuff. There's definitely stuff in the pipeline though, which is exciting, but
that's great. Right. We're about to get to the plug and final four questions, but a question that I thought was very apropos for you, because I know this is something that you have in your belief system and it's also in mine, and I try and I don't do it as overtly usually with people on the podcast, but if you could speak one thing into existence for your life now or going forward, what would it be?
Such a good question. I want to have impact. I want to help, and I want to be the highest state of myself that I can be. And I want to be, I want to be in the highest sort of life state that I can be. I want to be as healed as can be in order for me to step into my purpose of helping people understand their power and to heal and to be their own light. I think, as I said before, we're going into a world which is very different to what we know before. Things are changing rapidly, and I think more than ever it's important that we speak and walk in our truth of who we are, and that we don't live in fear-based mindset. If it's anything, I would speak into existence that I can step fully into my role of why I'm meant to be here ASAP, so I can have impact and help.
ASAP's always a major key.
ASAP.
Right, Kaya, we've got four more questions, but before we do that, I did this on purpose because I always thought I might forget to plug people's things, and it's just now I do. Kaya, plug absolutely everything you've got going on.
Oh my god, okay, right now.
Yeah, how do we get more Kaya?
Okay, I'm going back to teach at Cycle.
Cool.
From the 31st of August, 5 days a week, five classes a week across the Mortimer Street, Shoreditch and Westbourne Grove studios. So we can catch me there. The timetable is online if you search my name. And that is if you want to come vibe with me in the studio, you want to come to the safe space of the studio, you want to like come and exercise with me, that is where we can do that. I DJ at Nike probably like a couple times a month, so you can catch me there. But the other thing, which I think is probably better than that, is that I have my own radio show on somewhere called the Frontline Radio, which is an online radio show. And you literally just go to the website, frontlineradio.com, and you just press play, and I'll be there every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., my show is called The Morning Vibe, and I basically just play good vibes. We chat about something, a specific subject every week, and it's just basically like if you're working, you're cooking, you're chilling, like just put it on, and you can hear me, and we just get the good vibes flowing. I'm also a life coach, empowerment coach. So I take clients one-to-one. If it's something that you feel is called, you are unsure of where you're going or what you want to do, or you are just feeling in a place of like uncertainty, I really specialize in helping direct you and help you come further into your power and confidence. If you are not feeling, you know, yeah, just uncertain about yourself or anything, that's where I can really help. And I work with clients on a one-to-one basis. And I also host retreats, but that's on hold as we go through Corona, because I hold them in Tobago, and Trinidad and Tobago is not looking to open their borders anytime soon.
Right.
So that is not happening at the moment, but that I think is everything.
Awesome. And I'm going to put, actually Instagram.
Oh, God, yes. My Instagram is like where you can find everything. Yep. So my Instagram is at itskayac.
Okay.
And yeah, that's literally where everything lives for me.
Okay. And yeah, for those that are listening, everything is in the show notes. Okay, Kaya, final four questions. One has been changed for, I guess, season 3.5 in mine, in for Guards of Eden. But these are questions I'm going to ask everyone. And I would say they're slightly deeper questions, but we've had this beautiful conversation anyway, so it's a space that you probably already find yourself in.
Yeah.
Question number one. If I was to give you a megaphone that spoke to the entire world and you could share one message, what would it be?
I would say stay true to yourself. I would say that every time you give life to doubt or fear of yourself or your life, you give your power away, and you are your power. You are your most important power in your whole life, and you are here for a reason. You have a light the world needs, and coming into the new world, doubt and fear-based beliefs are not going to survive. So it is imperative and so important for your happiness and your life and your relationships that you walk in your truth and remember that you are your power. That's what I'd say.
I love it. That's awesome. Number two, what's your biggest personal struggle that not many people may know about?
Okay. My biggest personal struggle that not many people know about, although I've overcome a lot, and although I, you know, I'm sitting here talking about anorexia, how I healed and how I, you know, I'm recovered essentially from that, I massively still struggle with self-confidence. Mm. I really, really doubt myself a lot. I sometimes compare myself. I question myself a lot. And I don't know if that's something that's very well known. I come across as very, very confident extrovert. And although I am, you know, I do know myself very, very well, and I believe in myself, I still struggle with that. And that's my life's learning. And that's why I'm here though. So, you know, although I'm saying that, I know that's my biggest life lesson that I've got to know and learn in order for me to help people. So, yeah.
I love it. Well, yeah. Not love it, but I love the answer. What three personality traits / characteristics would you say that you've built your life upon up to this point?
Oh, these questions are so good. one of them is gratitude. Mm-hmm. 100% gratitude. I'm a very grateful person. Very grateful for everything. My nickname is # grateful. literally. Very, very grateful person, and gratitude, an attitude of gratitude will get you really, really in a very, very high vibrational life state. Mm. And helps keep you present. The other thing is, I guess I'm very enthusiastic. I'm enthusiastic about everything. And that can be really annoying for some people, but I don't care. Like, it is who I am. And some people are like, why are you so enthusiastic? There's nothing really to be enthusiastic about. And I'm like, well, I just am. Mm. And I think that's a really nice thing to, I quite like that about myself, because it just means I'm quite childlike, and I get excited easily. So I'm easy, please. And then I guess the last one would be, I don't know if this is one, but I guess just, oh, there's two, there's kindness and then blue sky thinking.
Huh.
Kindness is like, I guess, just self-explanatory. Being kind is just really important. And blue sky thinking, yeah, like the world is your oyster and there are no limits unless we say they are.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I love it. Final question. Slowly, it's gone from my least favorite to most favorite question that I ask. So, so here we go. Many years into the future, your time as Kaya Cansfield is coming to an end. The person closest to you only has one sentence to describe you and your time here on Earth. What would you hope that would be?
Fucking hell. So hard. She didn't hold back. She was fun-loving. Yeah, she didn't hold back. She was a go-getter, and she really went for what she really went for what she believed in. She helped remind people of their light and their power and their importance. And she, I don't know why this keeps coming to me, but she smiled a lot, and her smile was a reminder to try and always see the light amongst the darkness.
I love it.
Don't know where that came from. I honestly don't know where that came from.
Look at you like freestyling.
No, I honestly don't know where that came from.
I love it so much. Kaya, I'm just so grateful for your time. I really appreciate your story. I can't wait to feel the vibrations in person in the best way, whatever that looks like.
Me too, bro. Thank you so much, man.
That's no problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, and let's say goodbye to everyone. Bye, everyone. Yeah,
thank you so much. Bye, everyone. Bye.